This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The FT.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. The market's already had its say on 2016, and frankly, it's not pretty. So now it's the turn of the central banks to step out into the open. And how have they reacted? Almost in unison, they appear to have decided that it's too cold to venture out, and they'd rather stay indoors. All that adds up to a very uncertain and nervous start to the year. I'm Roger Blitz, and a warm welcome in these chilly times to Hard Currency, the Financial Times pick of the week's major movements and talking points across the FX market. One by one, the central banks have concluded that doing nothing appears to be the best course of action right now. We had last week the Bank of England saying nothing was going to move. European Central Bank has now done this, and the central banks of Brazil, Canada, and Russia all roughly saying the same thing, that this is no time for decision making, that oil is the worry, so is China, and growth is slow. And they just seem to want to wait for the market mayhem to pass on by. Could they be saying more, or do they really have no choice but to say as little as possible? I'm joined this week by Hans Redeker, Global Head of FX at Morgan Stanley. Hans, welcome. What did you, first of all, make of what Mario Draghi had to say at the ECB meeting?
So the ECB has to look into the decline in inflation expectations. It has as well to look into the relative increase of the euro. We are all looking into euro-dollar, but what we need to learn too is that the euro in trade-rated terms is much stronger than the European Central Bank would like to see it. Just one example. Euro sterling a few months ago was trading near 71. It shot up to 77. That is a good 10% increase.
So he's wanted to talk down the...
I think that inflation expectations in an environment where commodity prices are falling, and you combine that with relative strong performance of the currencies, and of course import prices are falling sharply. And the risk here is that when you have inflation expectations staying too low for too long,
yes,
then it can impact broader price indices. Now, when you look at inflation projections and because of base effect, we could actually see a situation ahead of us where European inflation rates for a number of months are going to be in negative territory. Now, that could have a quite paralyzing impact given that we are in an environment of high debt.
So what does that mean in terms of policy easing? Are we likely to see that happening, Mark?
I think that the risk have certainly increased. He has pointed out that measures are available to go into that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think still that he is... looking into the currency to help him out, because when you have oil prices falling as radically as is currently doing, other commodities are following that. And what has made the situation worse since December is that soft commodities are falling all of a sudden too. So in this environment, you wanted to stabilize inflation expectations. How do you do that? So under those circumstances in which we are in, you need to give a very decisive signal on the exchange rate. Now, of course, a lot of others are doing that too, and that puts us into a dilemma.
Who do you have in mind? You mean the Bank of Japan?
I think that the Bank of Japan is not as aggressive as the European Central Bank. The Bank of Japan has suggested that they could ease if circumstances would to press them into ease. But you have heard out of this that the BOJ is no longer progressive as it used to be. So it was progressive in the years 13 and 14, but it is now reactive. So I would not exclude them to ease, but in the case of the BOJ, I see they are pretty relaxed about matters. And what is important in Japan is that this economy is in transition. It is in transition to develop more service sector activity. That is quite a successful transition. So what we tend to do in the case of Japan, looking at machine tool orders, we are looking into export orders, and we behave as if this is still an economy mainly driven from the export side. It is slowly changing. When we're speaking to BOJ officials, they will tell you how important it is to develop the service sector to break the deflationary equilibrium. And I think that Japan has done a big progress into that direction. And there's a reason why we at Morgan Stanley started this year with a recommendation which was against the consensus. We said the yen is going to strengthen. Yes, we called risk appetite correctly on the negative side, but we are pointing out other factors too. One of the most important, very often overseen, is that Japan is leading in demographics. Their peak was in 1951, their birth peak was 51. That leads other nations by about 15 years, and their pension fund industry has now a negative cash flow. Okay. And they are invested abroad. That actually means they need to repatriate capital from abroad.
So there's the yen appreciating. On the upside of the coin is EM and various currencies falling like Brazil and Russia. And we saw central banks there perhaps expected to move on rates, but they decided not to. Now, they've been leading the market towards moves. And have they been over-promising? Or again, is it the right thing for them to do to hold fire at the moment?
There are very certain circumstances which prevented this move. We all know that the IMF forecast for Brazil was in particularly bearish. And when you see that as a central banker, you think twice if it's the right thing to hike interest rates. And I think that the central banks are stepping away from hiking interest rates as they try to have a much more pro-growth strategy. But on the other hand, that actually does remove the anchor yes. from the exchange rate. So you have seen what happened to the Russian ruble, that Russian ruble declined not only because of falling oil prices. This was, of course, as well related to this central bank decision. In the case of Brazil, the reaction there was much more muted, but I fear that the Brazilian real is going to stay under selling pressure going forward. We think it's going to reach 450 against the US dollar.
Okay. So against this backdrop, we have the Fed meeting next week. What's going to be weighing on their minds? Because what's been remarkable this year is how the dollar has strengthened without actually really having to do a great deal. It's all been happening on the other side. So what does that mean for the Fed's rate cycle path? What does the strong dollar mean for the US economy?
You see divergence all around. So you have, within the US economy, you have a substantial divergence taking place between the service sector and the manufacturing sector. The manufacturing sector is in recession. And of course, it is reacting to trade, and it does react to the US dollar, and it does mainly react to global demand deficiency. So that is because that is the reason why US manufacturing is performing poorly. Against that, you have a service sector, which is still relatively okay. You have domestic demand at about 2%. So a divergence in the economy. But then you have as well parts of the economy in early cycle stage. So when you look at capacity utilization, at production and orders, that is early stage. And you look at some financial indicators like corporate profitability relative to GDP that has peaked and is coming down.
Yeah.
Then you see the leverage in the corporate sector. It is high. So that is late cycle stuff.
This is pointing towards...
So you have a central bank which is actually really hiking interest rate in an environment which is very unusual, simply because you have late and early cycle stuff in the same economy. And that makes it so vulnerable. It means that the Fed is, at the moment, maybe in a very weak spot. It has hiked interest rates. There is an impact on the market. There is an impact on the US dollar. Emerging markets are weak. And, of course, it has as well to look into domestic stuff on the late cycle indicators.
This isn't great, is it? What does that leave Janet Yellen having to say next week?
She has to do a very, very good communication exercise, because you have now priced in one more rate hike for 16. So now the dots are at 4 rate hikes, and you have seen what Stanley Fischer had to say on that in this other CNBC interview. But I think that if the Fed wanted to have a significant impact, you want it to be ahead of the curve. So how do you get ahead of the curve and only one rate hike is priced in? You basically have to say to the market, it's one and done.
You really think that's a possibility?
No, I think it's by far too early to assume that. But because I'm thinking it is by far too early to do that step, you will have as well that the pressure has to come out somewhere else. And I think that the pressure is going to come out on two ends. That is a dollar and it is risk appetite.
Okay. It's going to be a very, very difficult meeting for them next week. We'll see what transpires out of it. My thanks to Hans Redeker, the global head of FX at Morgan Stanley. You can keep on top of all the currency news and analysis in the Financial Times on ft.com/markets. Katie Martin will be in this seat next week. Do join her for Hard Currency then. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, you might also like to try our Alpha Chat podcast presented by me, Cardiff Garcia, where each week FT writers, bloggers, and their invited guests will have a wonky, funny, and occasionally even irreverent chat about topics related to the financial markets and economics. Check it out at ft.com/podcasts.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.